And today we welcome Janice Litvin into the Cigar Lounge. Janice, how are you today?
I'm good, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you here. I love talking to our Cigar Peg members. Janice, let me start you off with an easy softball, which is tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, thank you for that softball. I help leaders and teams banish burnout in their organizations through keynotes, workshops, and mastermind groups.
And how did you get involved in doing that? How did that start for you?
Well, I was doing workplace wellness talks, more generic, how to amp up your wellness activities and events and engagement. And then a client called several years ago and said, we would like you to do a talk about stress, but we don't want mindfulness. We want you to go deep. And luckily, I had already been researching social psychology in the area of stress and burnout. And so I created a program and off I went.
Yeah, what is your background? I mean, what were you doing before this?
I was in the tech world. I did software development, software training, software consulting, and then for 20 years, software recruiting. So okay. I heard a lot of stories about burnout firsthand. And then during the recession, I had nothing to do because there were no jobs. So I went to the gym, found Zumba Fitness, became a this is a really long story short.
Became
a Zumba instructor, which I still love doing today. And then I wanted to take the intrinsic motivators for health and fitness into the corporate world. And I started doing talks about wellness and fitness and health.
Okay. All right. So what is your, do you have a set market that you are mostly working in? What is that market?
Corporate and associations.
Okay. And when you say corporate, is there an type of corporation or just any corporate environment?
Almost every large corporation has an IT department, although right. That is not my only niche. It's one of my main niches.
Okay. So yeah, there's that. That's what I was trying to see because I didn't know if that's what you sprung from.
But I also have been asked lately to speak to STEM women. So within tech, there's a whole movement towards helping women get more engaged in tech. So I help women cultivate their careers from college all the way up.
And how did you, so when did you first find yourself called to the stage as a speaker? How did that happen?
I'm laughing because when I was 12 years old, my mother said, you will learn to stand in front of groups. And she made each one of us children take speech classes early okay. on. So from the very beginning, my mother made us all, she knew that was an important skill.
Very good. Good. And I guess, so we contribute mom. So as you learned to do this, mom was your first push person that pushed you out there. Did you develop it, get mentors or anything like that as you went?
Oh, well, absolutely. Yes, of course.
So tell me about your first mentor, the first time you found someone that helped you that you went, wow, this is great.
I guess I would have to attribute it to Patricia Fripp. As I'm sure many Cigar Peg and NSA members know who Patricia Fripp is. I'm lucky to have her in my Northern California chapter of NSA.
Okay.
I've been following her for years. And when I came back to NSA about 10 years ago, she was the first presenter that I heard.
So wait, so we just took a leap that just scares me, which is you're speaking in front of your mother. And then we went to Patricia Fripp. Fill in some space. Tell me, how did you end up at NSA? Where did this happen?
Okay, I'll back that up.
Yeah.
Back when I was a software consultant in my tech life, my boss, Frank, came to me one day and said, I think you should be the trainer for our whole division.
Oh, okay.
So I became a stand-up software trainer and from that became a member of NSA back then.
Okay.
So I would call Frank my first mentor, not only in speaking and training, but in life.
Very good. And tell me, what did Frank know anything about it, or was he just a person that pushed you out there?
He pushed me out there, and he connected me with the right trainers inside our larger organization.
Okay. And what was the first mistake, the first fumble you ever had as a speaker where you went, I don't really want to do this anymore? When did that?
I'm happy to say I never said I don't want to do this anymore. I'm trying to think. Of course, I look for the best. I guess the way I would answer that question best is, even though they tell you not to read negative reviews, like many people, I read all my reviews.
Got it.
And the first time I got a negative review, I was like, wow, should I take this advice or should I not take this advice?
And
so I don't know if I would call it a fumble or just one person's opinion.
Okay. And so what did you take their review to heart? Did you work on it? What did you do?
Well,
I asked because I know me, I used to love the negative reviews for a long, long time. Yeah. I live on them.
Yeah. reminds you of home or what is it?
No. It's just, if somebody gives me criticism, it's a chance for me to improve.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Well, so I have a speech, the basic speech that I developed for that first client that asked me about stress and burnout. I've been developing and improving and developing and improving since I've been, every time I give it, there's an improvement of one sort or another. And I customize my talks for every client. But at one conference, one person wrote on his evaluation that he wanted me to get to the takeaways faster. Now, I'm taught that a story is what connects the audience to you. And he didn't like hearing the story. And I've learned since that certain people like to be communicated with in certain ways. And he was one of those no-nonsense people that didn't want to hear anything but the takeaways. But he was one out of a room of 100.
Sure. But now did you adapt any skills to help that process along for that 1 out of 100? Did you change anything you did?
Well, what I did do was I worked harder on the way I customized my talk. So at the very beginning, I throw out humorous vignettes that are customized for each audience. So I focus more on making sure I'm really customizing for what I learn. I do a lot of research for every client and understand who they are, what their stressors are, and customize for them.
Okay. And so you learned early on how to customize and appease your audience, correct?
Yes.
Good. Good. And as you developed, how did you end up at NSA? How did that occur for you?
Well, as I mentioned to you, I joined NSA years ago when I was doing software training. And the way that happened back then is that I knew someday I wanted to be self-employed. So I found groups of entrepreneurs, particularly women entrepreneurs, San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. And everywhere I went, I met NSA members.
How far back are we talking?
We're talking about 30 years ago.
Okay. That's where I'm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and is that meeting these people is what got you into NSA?
Right. Right.
Okay. So you met Fripp at the Northern California chapter.
I actually met Fripp the first time I joined NSA. I met Fripp. And what's funny about that story is she was the local, she had been national president and she was our local president. And the San Francisco chapter hosted the annual conference before it was called Influence.
Okay.
And having taught aerobics back then, they asked me to do aerobics at 6:30 in the morning for our conferences in San Francisco.
Okay. Well, I didn't know there was a 6:30 in the morning. So you start doing that. Tell me how that develops. How did that feel?
Oh, it felt fine. What happened was, though, eventually I became a recruiter and I was doing a little bit of speaking for the purposes of selling my services and helping candidates develop their resumes and interview skills, et cetera. But I dropped out of NSA back then because I wasn't speaking for a living per se. Then I came back to NSA when I realized I wanted to bring the love of fitness into the corporate world.
Okay. So hold on. Sorry about that. It'll clear my throat. So now, what happened? Talk to me a little bit about when you met Fripp. How did that all go down?
Well, the first time I saw her speak at the local chapter in the recent years, she did, she famously for the San Francisco Northern California chapter, she will teach us about speech openings. And she's done that for many chapters of NSA. And she will bring people on guinea pigs on stage to help coach. The very first time I witnessed this, I said to myself, I will never, ever be able to put myself in that position. I had very low confidence in storytelling ability. And the best I could do was just learn by sitting there. And it took me a couple of years until I had the confidence to get coached by Patricia.
Okay.
That went very well.
And let me ask you about that, because a lot of us sit there and we don't know if we're not sure if we're good enough to be coached or good enough to approach somebody. What were you looking for? What did you find? What made you transition?
Well, certainly I was looking for better ways, ways to be better on stage, primarily to engage my audience, right?
So, what was it you're looking to achieve before you went, okay, now I have achieved it, now I can go to Fripp? What was it you personally were trying to achieve before you felt good enough?
It was a feeling, and it was just experience practicing. So before I came back to NSA, I went to Toastmasters, and I had a goal of completing 10 speeches before I felt like I was qualified to even begin to come back to NSA.
Okay, great. All right. And you did that. So now you come back to NSA.
Right.
And what would you say, and I'm going to ask you to focus and tell me the single biggest piece of advice that Patricia gave you that changed what you do?
Wow, there's been so much. Okay, I got one.
Good.
You focused statements. So when people, especially the first 3 minutes of a talk, rather than today I'm going to stand up here and talk about ABC, it is today you will hear the following that I hope you will connect to, things like that. So that message has been drummed into my head over these last several years that I have finally learned. And a lot of times I'll hear a lesson from her and it won't sink. I'll hear it and up here I'll get it, but it doesn't sink all the way in. And it takes me a while to figure out how to put the advice into practice.
Phenomenal. Good. That's great advice. That's what I'm getting at. So what is it? Okay. So you're the queen of banishing burnout. Right. What is it that motivates you to get up in the morning and do something?
Just the love of my work. Is that, I'm not quite
sure. No, that's fine. If that's what it is.
Yeah, I love my work. Luckily, I'm surrounded by my family, my husband, and my adult son. My adult son is also self-employed. He and I feed off of each other and give each other a lot of support and encouragement.
Well, do you ever feel stuck? Like you're stuck in a rut and you're not sure where to go next?
Do I feel stuck in a rut? No. Sometimes I figure out where I'm going, but I don't know how to get there. And I do have a successful speaker coach who's been in the business longer than I.
Oh, and who's that?
So right now, Ed Robinson.
Okay. And how long have you been working with Ed Robinson?
About 8 or 10 months.
Okay. And between him and Fripp, there were others, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Yes. Who were some of your highlights?
Other coaches come to you at different phases of your development that you need.
When the teacher appears.
Yeah.
What is it that you would say Ed Robinson has taught you that was something people should just say, yes?
Oh my gosh. There's so much. I don't even know where to start. Well, Ed is known as Ed the Rainmaker Robinson.
Okay.
So his biggest strength is helping speakers learn how to sell and learn how to go after various market, figure out what market is best and go after it.
Okay. And let me ask you this. Let's shift into that. Do you like selling?
I happen to like it. Yes.
Okay. What do you like about it? Talk to us.
Closing a deal.
Well, we all like to close the deal, but on that road, that journey, we get rejection.
Yes, we do.
How do you process that? How do you handle that?
Here's how I process it. And I remember saying this to another friend recently, and I realized it's a good thing to say to myself. Every rejection gets you closer to the next sale.
Okay.
And so luckily I'm working a number of leads at any one time. So if one doesn't make it, I just move on to the next one. Sometimes they come back. Sometimes they don't have your budget, but they want you. And a year later they come back.
So do you see how do you handle sales? I mean, are you out making friends or out trying to find a need? What are you doing?
Everything you've ever heard about selling is what I'm doing. I go places. I go to the coffee shop. For example, I was at a coffee shop recently with my son and daughter-in-law, and a friend of hers from Ultimate Frisbee popped in. And, you know, I have my sales hat on 24/7. So I asked the friend, oh, what do you do? Where do you work? And she works for a tech company. I said, oh, do you have employee resource groups at your company? Oh, yes. She goes, I'm the chair of the Latinx. I said, may I have your card? And so we connected on LinkedIn and take it from there. So that's one way. The other way is I look to connect with people on LinkedIn and all kinds of groups.
Good. Yeah, and that's why people need to hear. But you don't feel, you feel like you're constantly moving forward as long as you're connecting.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely true.
Do you, at this point in your career, do you consider yourself successful?
Yes.
And what do you identify as successful?
You know, that's a very big question, very big philosophical question. Some people measure it on money. Some people measure it on progress in life. And for me, it's about reaching different levels, reaching different pinnacles as you move through your career. And I constantly feel that growth and that success.
So you're always looking for the next level?
Not always. I mean, when you get to a new level, you're not, you've got to skate at that level before you're ready for the next level.
Okay. So how do you know when it's time to move on?
It's just a feeling. It's a gut feeling.
Just gut reaction. Okay.
Yeah.
Identifying what you've achieved now and saying it's successful. How, if you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be?
Can you be a little more specific?
Yeah. You have an opportunity for everybody to remember you for one thing that you've achieved.
Helping people not burn out and just helping people be better and happier.
Okay. That's, if I had specifics, I'd ask specific questions, but I don't. I just like to pander and wander around.
Okay.
So tell me right now on your desk, in your office, what do you have as an upcoming project? Something new in Janice's world that you're about to embark on?
Something new. Well, I'm about to keynote at a higher level on a larger group coming up. So that's always a new challenge. In my keynotes, I do a lot of audience interaction, a lot.
Okay.
And so in a room of 200, it's one kind of experience. In a room of 500, it's a little bit different. So that's my next challenge.
And how are you looking at that challenge? You're looking to interact with 500 people. What kind of interaction are we talking about?
I ask audience questions and let them blurt things out, not throughout the entire keynote, but enough to where they feel they're engaged with me and themselves and the material.
And I guess what I'm asking is when you have 500 people blurting out something all at one time, are you going to be doing that with some kind of a tool or an electronic device where they can all chime in? Or is it just going to be you wandering into the audience and seeing who's there? How do you see that working?
The first answer I hear.
Oh, okay.
Right, okay. Here. What the first, well, usually I'm looking for a few answers to a question.
Okay.
And so I hear a bunch of things and I repeat it back and I try to figure out which person, usually I can tell because their hands are up, and I give the person eye contact and repeat what they said so the rest of the audience can hear.
Well, so now let's talk about your business model. I mean, if you were to win the Powerball and have $1 billion,
I'll take 14 million.
What business would you want to go in?
At the business I'm in now.
Okay, you would stay there.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah.
So now let's take that and say you have all that money to spend on your business.
Yeah.
What would you spend it on?
I would spend it on world-class videography.
Okay.
And more coaching, I think. More coaching about my speeches and the direction I should be going in. Although I feel confident in the direction I'm heading, but I always think there's room for improvement.
Dennis, banishing burnout is your thing. So let me ask you this on that topic. Is there a single hack that you can offer to people to avoid burnout? Is there one thing more important than others?
You know, it's about knowing yourself first. So the first step to any change is awareness. So it's knowing yourself and setting up limits to what you will accept at work and at home. Learning how to push back and say no without saying no. You can come across as positive while you're at the same time saying no.
And, I guess that is true. I don't know. I've rarely ever say no, so I'm not sure. I can't address that. Let me ask this. If you could sit back right now and tell a 16-year-old Janice Litvin one thing that she needs to know for the future, what would it be?
Find your confidence. Your confidence is in there. You just have to go in and find it. And it took me a long time to develop confidence.
And how did you develop that?
Part of it came from finding what I really wanted and loved to do, and then getting positive reinforcement from people around me, clients, coworkers, bosses, friends.
Okay. In your, I guess you're saying you're getting ready for a 500 person audience. Is there a new course, a new book, or something new on the horizon you're looking at doing to implement? Or is it just about getting out there and speaking bigger?
It's everything. So I am developing a new keynote. I referenced earlier about STEM women.
Right.
So right now, my main breadwinning talk is about banishing burnout. And I don't know back here if you can see my book, Banish Burnout Toolkit. Yep. But one day I realized that I have a lot of advice from my own world experience as a recruiter, as a corporate worker, as having one or two really good bosses. And so I decided to develop a new keynote around STEM women, filtered with advice about burnout, but also filtered in there is career advice.
And I guess I want to ask, do you find a difference in dealing with burnout between men and women?
On the surface, I would say no. Wow, that's a really good question. No one's ever asked me that question. I was going to say, my initial reaction is women in general were never taught how to push back or say no. In general, I'm making a very broad generalization. Many women know how to push back and say no, but many of us were taught not to say no. Many of us were taught when someone asks you for a favor, they're a good friend, they must need help. Of course, you say yes. As you go along in life, you meet people who will aggressively or passively try to take advantage of you. Sometimes it's a boss. Sometimes it's a coworker. Sometimes it's a friend. And so it took me a long time to learn how to filter through those requests and figure out when to say yes and when to say, can't help you today, maybe next day, you know, maybe Saturday.
Well, as you say, it's not all women that have that, because
right.
I have a wife and two daughters that say no all the time.
You or to anybody else?
To everyone. That's why I say yes to everything. But I guess that's the way they are. The members of the Cigar Peg, if they want to reach out and chat with you or talk to you, what is the best way for them to reach you?
Through my email, janice@janicelitvin.com. You can see the spelling, I think, in the bottom corner of the
You Zoom got it. Yep. Window. And since this is a podcast, I'll just spell it again. LITVIN, Janice Litvin. Janice@janicelitvin.com.
And I'm very, very active on LinkedIn. I have LinkedIn open almost 24/7. If people trying to reach me, that's also a good way.
Good. And let me ask you my last question for you is there anything that you would like to say to the members of Cigar Peg about your success, their success, or anything that
yes.
you can close on?
Yes. I didn't think about this in advance, but I'll tell you one thing that I really appreciate about Cigar Peg is that Ed Rigsby has created a very supportive, engaging group. And I feel like in life, it's all of our responsibility to help one another. I really appreciate the help I've received since I've been a member, and I'm always open to helping others.
That's awesome, Janice. And I want to thank you for being here today. I'm glad we had this time together. And I appreciate everything you've shared.
Thank you. And I appreciate you for having me, Joe. Thank you.